Hello and welcome to the Reloading Rag Chew episode. I really don't know. It's been way too long. I got to apologize for all my regular listeners. I've been gone for a while, far longer than I ever intended to be, but it's been a bit of a mess. I basically lost a place to reload. I mean, I could do it in a pinch, but I got really frustrated with it. I didn't have a very good setup. It was very temporary. I was missing a lot of things that were basically buried in storage that prevented me from doing anything. And it just finally got frustrating. About 6-8 months ago, I think. I'm really bad at figuring out time. I did buy a new house. It's a great house. It's a old house. And the room that is going to become the outdoors room. So, reloading. Probably not gunsmithing. That'll be in the shop. But outdoor equipment. That kind of stuff. Which also happens to be the largest room in the house. For some reason. The joys of being single. It needed some work. It was probably the... It was an add-on to the house. It was the worst finished room and had not been taken care of. So I then set about completely redoing that room, ripping out the existing windows, reframing, replacing some places where they didn't know how to use caulk correctly, putting a whole new set of windows in a completely different configuration, redoing the drywall on it, re-insulating it, rerunning all of the electrical, and basically built it out into the room that I want it to be. Oh, and new lighting. We may talk about that a little bit later. So I finally got my reloading bench up last weekend, or no, 2 weekends ago. But last weekend was the weekend before Christmas, so pretty much nothing happened except for panicked shopping. Starting to get all my stuff, starting to unpack. I think I've got... I'll say 95% of it unpacked, but I keep being surprised at the number of boxes I find that I didn't even know that I had. I'm starting to get into that wonderful part where you open a box and you go, what is this? And where did it come from? So, apparently I've bought way too much stuff over the years. But that's reloading for you, and I don't think I'm going to change. It's certainly not on my New Year's goals. So, I should be back reloading soon. I've got a few last-minute things to do. A couple of them I'm going to try and shoot video of and put them up on YouTube. I've always wanted to try getting into YouTube video, even though I really, really hate video editing. I figure if I do it enough, maybe I'll get okay at it. We'll see. I'm not going to put Reloading Rag Chew as the YouTube channel. I've been reading a little bit on putting stuff up on YouTube. Obviously, YouTube seems to heavily frown on anything reloading-based because they hate freedom. I'd love to not use YouTube, but unfortunately, if I don't use YouTube, the videos will probably never get seen. I mean, I could put them on Pornhub like InRange did and hope that someone accidentally stumbles across them, and then probably get hate mail because... that's not what they were there looking for. I'm not going to title it anything reloading. I'm going to probably keep it out of the comments because, at least at first, because apparently that's what YouTube's using a lot for determining with their little AI systems whether it's going to get flagged or not. As time goes on, and if I can get this established, then I'm going to start. And there'll be talk about what it's for and how it relates to it in the video. They don't seem to push too hard on that. They don't seem to key on that too much. But being a new channel, I don't want to throw like reloading right in the title of the video because there's a very good chance it will get taken down or what do they call it? A community strike or whatever. So I will post it on Facebook. I'm also getting slightly more active on Reddit. I found it to be a better replacement for forums. Facebook is an utterly terrible replacement for forums. Forums, some of them are quite good. A lot of them are actively dying. If you are new to reloading and you're looking at forums, the Cast Bullets, which Bullets is spelled B-O-O-L-I-T-S, it's mostly a casting forum, but they do have very good reloading information, and it's a very active membership over there. But a lot of the other forums are really dying, and, you know, Reddit's not perfect, but it provides a more reasonable search mechanism, and with the upvote, downvote system, it tends to push the crap out of the way quicker and put the good stuff up to the forefront. So I'll probably be posting on there. I don't know if I'll start a subreddit. I don't know how to do that yet, but I'll take a look at it. So what I wanted to talk about, and some of this may be kind of old news for some of my regular subscribers, but I saw this on a couple of the other groups that I'm on, not related to reloading, and it was basically 10th that you just got a press for Christmas, or you got money to buy a press. What are 10 tips to get you started? So some of you guys may pick something up on this. Also, if you've got friends that are getting into reloading or just got equipment, feel free to send this to them. There's more than just this. These are just like 10 really common questions and really common mistakes I see beginners make. So let's just kick right into this. First thing, RTFM. Read the friggin' manual. And I'm talking about there's usually going to be a couple of manuals. One will be the manual with your press. If you got something like a single-stage rock chucker or a Lee O-frame press or something, there's not a whole lot there. It's this is how you mount it to the bench. Do pay attention to that. Mounting it to the bench is one of the most critical things. And if you've got a bad mount, it's going to haunt you for pretty much your whole reloading time till you fix it. If you've got a more advanced press, like a turret press or a progressive press, really read that manual. There's a lot of little details in there. For example, even on the Lee turret, which is a relatively simple turret, you have to know how to turn the auto rotation mechanism on and off. So you really need to read that manual. That one shouldn't take you too long. Keep it handy, especially when you're setting your press up. Now, the second thing that you should have gotten, and if you didn't, you need to go out and buy it right now, is a reloading manual. I'm not going to talk that any one is better than any of the others. The Lyman, the Redding manual, the Lee manual, all of them are very, very good manuals. Pick one, pick whichever one you can get on the best sale on Amazon, pick it up and read the first part, which goes through the process of reloading. Do that before you really start anything. It'll take you a little bit of time, but you're going to start with a much better understanding than you will with anything else. Add in some YouTube videos, add in some other stuff, but start with that manual because those are some of the best written, clear and thorough startups that you need to make this work. So go through that. Please read the manual. I see questions. I'm seeing questions every day now that anyone that read, even skimmed over the manual, would have known the answer to. And no, there's no dumb questions except for the one that you could have answered by paying attention. So, next thing. You may be missing some stuff. This is going to depend on what press you got, what kit it might have been. You know, you might have gotten just a basic press. If that's the case, you're missing a lot of things. You might have gotten one of the various reloading kits, the RCBS kit. I've seen them on sale many times recently. It's a pretty good kit. So you've, and that's part of reading that manual. That manual is going to walk you through what you need to reload completely. A couple things that may be included, but I'm going to still say that you're missing. A backup scale or an electronic scale. A lot of the kits come with either, some of them come with a very good balance beam scale. A few of them come with an electronic scale. A lot of them come with a very, very basic, not to say it's non-functional, but a very, very basic mechanical scale. These will work. They can be a little frustrating to use. In addition, with any reloading, powder weight is It's not actually the ideal way to measure powder, but it's the best way that the hobbyist has to measure powder, and it's also going to be one of your most critical safety factors. So having two scales where you can check it on like a digital and your analog scale is really, really good for safety, especially when you're starting out. You know, digital scales aren't perfect. Some of them start reading kind of far off when the batteries start dying. So having that analog scale to double check it against, really good idea. So I would go ahead and, unless your kit came with a very good digital scale, I would pick up another one. Frankfurt Arsenal has one that's relatively inexpensive. I think Hornaday does too. Something like that. You need a backup of some kind. Next thing would be a set of digital calipers. A lot of these kits aren't coming with calipers. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. You can get a set of digital calipers off of Amazon or at Harbor Freight for just a few bucks. I would recommend stepping up and getting the Eye Gauging brand. I've used several of they're an import brand, don't get me wrong. But I've used numerous of their measuring instruments, both in reloading and also in machining. Not perfect, but very good quality for the money. They'll set you back about $30 for a set of calipers. If you want to just go all out, get yourself a set of Mitutoyos or Sterets. Mitutoyo makes some excellent digital calipers. Just watch out because there's a lot of fakes of those because they're very common in the industry. Next thing, a cleaning method. And I would really encourage you to listen to my episode on case cleaning. This is going to depend on what kind of reloading you're doing and where you're getting your brass. If you are, for example, a hunter or rifle shooter that is going to buy a new set of brass, you know, grab it when you run your bolt back, put it in the case, you can probably get by for quite a while just cleaning the cases manually. If you are a high-volume pistol shooter that is going to be buying bulk brass online or picking it up at your local range that it sat in the dirt for 2 weeks, you're going to need a pretty good cleaning method to avoid getting dirt and grit in your dies and damaging them. Most kits don't come with a cleaning method. I would start out and get a basic tumbler. There's a dozen different brands, a dozen different types. My only recommendation is that I would get one with a solid lid, not a vented lid, as it will keep the dust down quite a bit. And then I would not bother with any of the commercially available media. I would go to PetSmart or Petco or any of these large pet stores and find walnut, lizard, and reptile. It's either lizard and reptile or bird. I can't remember which one. But a big bag of it will cost you like 10 bucks and last for forever. There's some options for throwing in some car wax into there. Certain waxes are okay. Certain ones are not. I wouldn't bother with that as a newbie. I would add a cap full of mineral spirits to it the first time that you run it. And actually run it without any cases in it. That will help knock the dust down a lot. And then the last thing that is frequently missing, or I'm going to say incomplete, is if you're doing rifle cases, a trim setup. If you're doing any kind of bottleneck cases, rifle or pistol, with the fact that there's very few pistol bottlenecks, and honestly, if you're new to reloading, stay away from bottleneck pistol rounds for now. They are very tricky. They're very annoying. Bottleneck rifle, no problems there. But you'll need some kind of trim. And the reason why a lot of kits don't come with these is trim setups are heavily based on the caliber, or at least there's a lot of adapters to them. For example, on a lathe type like the RCBS, a lot of times you'll need a shell holder. The new ones are more universal, but you'll need a shell holder. And then you'll need a bushing that is the right diameter for the diameter bullet you're reloading. With the Lee system, you need a length rod and you need the shell holder. So it doesn't make commercial sense for these manufacturers to include like 50 different adapters that you're probably going to lose with these kits. So a lot of them don't. If your kit didn't come with any kind of trim setup, I would recommend starting with the Lee setup. You're going to outgrow it really quickly, but it also costs you like $10 or $15 to get completely set up for any common caliber. So you're not going to be out a whole lot of money. Later you can move up, but you know, it used to be everyone would buy the lathe style trimmers because they do everything, but they don't do everything great and they're really slow. So you're seeing people a lot now are going with a world's cheapest trimmer, a Girard, one of these high end drill powered, caliber specific ones. Don't jump into that. Don't assume that you have to have one of those fancy ones. The $15 Lee option works great. Just make sure you get all the pieces. And it will work until you figure out exactly what you're doing and get things down well enough that you can justify spending a couple $100 on a case-specific trimmer. So, that's what you may have been missing. Now, and this may have been a little out of order, before you start, before you unpack everything, make sure you've got the right type of press for what you want to do. If you're a competition pistol shooter and you're looking to do high volume pistol reloading and you just got an RCBS Rock Chucker for Christmas, it may be a good time to politely ask for the gift receipt. Why? A single stage press, you're just not going to be fast enough compared with what you probably want. You want at least a turret, if not a progressive. Now, if you are a precision rifle shooter and somebody got you a progressive press, even if it's a good one, let's say it's a Dillon 550 or a 650 or the new 750, you can definitely do it on that, but if your goal is only to ever load a few rounds to go precision rifle shooting, you'd probably be better off trading that one back in, getting a single stage and a very nice trim and all of the other ancillary equipment you need for long-range shooting. Neck turning, all of that kind of stuff. You've got a press that's kind of overkill. If you want to load rifle and you got a square DLB, well, you're just kind of out of luck. So really look, a really common mistake here is if you want to load big rifle cases, say 30-06 and bigger, and you got what they call a C-frame press. So this is basically, there's two kinds of single stage. There's a C-frame and an O-frame. And a C-frame has basically one piece holding it together along the back, and an O-frame has a piece holding it together along the back and the front, or the two sides, but it makes a full circle. If you're loading big stuff, those C-frame presses don't last. They're just not strong enough. They are great if you're loading small rifle and pistol, because it's much easier to get stuff in and out of them, but they just can't hold up to the force. You know, they'll start bending and eventually crack over time. Now, if you got one of those, you're starting out, you want to later reload 30-06 or 300 Win Mag or something, keep it for now. Those make really great decapping stations down the road, and just plan on upgrading later. The good thing is none of the C-frame presses cost that much. But make sure you've got the right kind of press for what you want to do before you get set up and get super frustrated. Next on the press thing, number four. If you got a progressive press, set one thing at a time. So, for example, when you're doing the case sizing, focus only on the case sizing die. Basically, size a case, get it perfect. Do not move on until you get each stage perfect. And this is where that manual's really going to help you. If you try and just like, I'm going to throw a case in there and I'm going to adjust it as I go along, doesn't work. Anything on a progressive, I would recommend running 10 cases through that stage. And until all 10 of them are correct, don't move on. I used to be really against new reloaders using progressive presses. It's gotten better, particularly with the advent of some online resources. Also, it depends on the brand press you have. For example, if you've got a Dylan or the Hornaday Lock and Load, you're probably okay. If you've got like a Lee Pro 1000, don't get me wrong, it's a good press. I've loaded tens of thousands of rounds on them. They can be very finicky, especially for a new reloader. So some of that you just got to pay attention to. And if you're setting a progressive press up, be patient. Just take your time. Don't expect that you're going to mount the press and you're going to run 100 bullets through it in the next hour. It's just not going to happen. You're going to spend 3 to 5 hours getting it set up before you start reloading some. Next one. Start with basic components for whatever round you want to run. No, it might not be what you want to do long term, but it's going to be a better and an easier way to learn. So, for example, if you're reloading 9mm, start with 115 or 124 grain plated or jacketed bullets. If you're loading 45, start with 200s or 230 balls. If you're loading 223, start with 55 grain, just full metal jackets. If you're loading 308, start with either 50 grain or 168. The reason is there's a lot more data on these, and it's just going to be a lot simpler because, you know, you can start getting into, you could go, oh, I want to do these reduced drag factor, you know, high speed, low drag kind of rounds. Well, then you start having a problem with your cedar die is deforming the tips. Well, why is that? Because your dies aren't designed for those bullets, so you're going to have to get a different seating. You know, that's a lot to deal with when you're a new reloader. Start with basics. Also, and this is especially true on the rifle side of things, stay away from any of the monolithic or all copper projectiles for now. They're perfectly fine. They're very good bullets. They have extremely good performance in specific scenarios. But I see a lot of rifle shooters will take, you know, they'll have a 223 and they'll have a 60 grain, 65 grain monolithic bullet, and they'll try and load it using a regular full metal jacket. Well, that bullet's longer. You can't do that. You're massively going to change the case pressure. And also, reloading data for some of these can be very scarce or limited. So start with the basics. If you're looking at bullets, there's a lot of choices. You know, I don't know if I'd start with lead to begin with at this point, at this day and age. They're certainly good bullets. If you're loading 38 or a revolver cartridge, you can really shove anything in there. You can shove random bits you found in your yard in there, and it'll probably shoot in a revolver. Everything else, you know, you're going to have an easier time with plated. RMR is a good source for plated bullet. Barry's bullets are readily available. I think Cabela's still carries them. You know, on the rifle side, if you buy something made by Hornaday, or really Hornaday is one of the biggest, or Speer or one of these other brands, you know, you're going to find Sierra. You're going to find plenty of load data. Just keep it simple to start with. The other thing is there's a good chance you're going to screw up a lot of these first ones. And it's a lot less painful when you throw a case in the trash bin that's got a 13-cent bullet in it than when you throw a case in the trash bin that's got a 75-cent bullet in it. So your mistakes cost less. By the same token, I would not recommend buying more than a couple hundred of any projectile to start with. Just, you know, there's a lot of pickiness, especially on the guns. And I've seen guys go out there and buy, you know, a 2,000 round case of something that their gun just won't run. And now you've got 2,000 bullets of something that you can't use. Well, you can buy a new gun. That's always a good option. Primers, start with basic primers. CCIs work in almost everything and are fairly readily available. You know, if you've got a light sprung revolver or something with a light sprung, you might need to go with Federal primers, but don't sweat the primers. Try and get the right ones. There used to be a myth that Magnum primers cause case pressure increases. That seems to be fairly, except in the shotgun world, that seems to be fairly wrong. I guess that's the best way to put it. Between Magnum and regular primers, Magnum primers are harder. So if you buy Magnum primers, you may have ignition problems on some guns and dimpled primers and those kind of things. So just go with something basic. And then powder. Do some research before you buy powder. I just saw a question the other day where someone was, you know, I thought all gunpowder was the same, so I just bought what they had, and can I put it in shot shells? And it was a rifle powder that would blow a shotgun to smithereens. Do some research. The other thing is, you can make on the pistol and shotgun side, you can make just about any powder work. That doesn't mean it'll be good. On the rifle side, it's less so, but there's still usually a good half a dozen powders that will work with any case. But there's almost always just a few that work a lot better or a lot easier. Another warning that I'll have, rifle, this doesn't affect you guys as much. On the pistol, buy a powder to learn on that fills the case at least halfway. And the reason for that is it's very common to get a double charge when you're learning. You're not paying attention, especially if it's a progressive. You know, there's some easy ways to mess up. You're not familiar, you know, you're not used to it yet. Because of this, I really, really do not like new reloaders using tight group. I know it's a very popular powder. The reason it got popular is it's decent performance, and you get a lot of rounds out of it per pound because it is so dense. I have seen more destroyed pistols from tight group than from any other means at all. It is not inherently an unsafe powder. However, you can very easily double charge a 9mm case and not see it. So I would highly not recommend it for a new reloader. It's just another factor. And if you're a new reloader and you blow a gun up, it's really going to ruin your day. So a few here on common cases. On 9, Power Pistol is a very good powder. Winchester Superfield, which is actually what I use, is a very good powder. And Winchester 231, which is pretty much the same thing as HP 38, are all really good powders. They all have at least a 50% case fill, so if you double charge, you're going to have powder spilling out of your case. On the 45 side, Clay's is a very good powder. With clays, there's a little bit of a headache because there's old clays and new clays, so try and find data for new clays. Winchester 231, Bullseye is very good, and Accurate number 5 is very good. I found the Accurate powders meter really well. If you're looking at 223, the CFE 223, I mean, it's in the name, it can't be bad. TAC is also a very good powder, and BLC2. Is a really solid option. For 308, Varget is very good. Can be a little harder to find because it's very popular. BLC2 again, TAC again. So if you're reloading both of those can be a couple good powders to start with. And then 4064 is just a really solid all around. It's actually a former military powder, so it's what a lot of like 7.62 rounds and stuff like that were loaded with originally. The great thing is, at the time of this recording, which is December of 2019, we're not in a shortage. Powders are readily available. I remember when I went back into reloading, you went to the store and you bought what was available, not necessarily what was right, and then you made it work. Not a great way to do it. Right now, you can find almost all of this stuff. I would highly recommend finding a local resource for buying powder. To start with, I would only buy a pound of whatever you're looking at first. Just like I said about bullets, some guns don't like certain things. You may not like it. Getting stuck with 7 pounds of powder, it's kind of annoying. I mean, I've got powders. I've got, I think I counted 40-something different kinds of powder. No, it was more than that. I got a lot of different kinds of powder. I reload a lot of random things. Some of them I've got on the shelf, and they get touched about once a year. Kind of a waste when you really look at it. And if you're a reloader that are like a lot of people and you only reload 2 or 3 different rounds, having pounds of powder you can't use, you can sell them friend to friend. You can't ship them anywhere. So you've got to find, you know, it's kind of a headache. You can't return them. The other thing is, if you're unfamiliar with it, if you buy powder or primers online, you have to pay a hazmat charge. This is usually $40. So if you want a pound of powder, okay, it's $25 plus 40. Now you're paying $65 per pound of powder. So all of a sudden, paying $30, so $5 over the online price at your local retailer, it's kind of worth it. Now, if you're buying 50 pounds of powder, $40 ain't much. That only adds $1 or so to each pound. But don't, like I said, don't go out and stock up on a bunch of stuff until you know it works for you. So find a local resource. Be aware a lot of gun stores don't, a lot of them now don't carry reloading stuff. A lot of them see it as a headache because they have to carry 150 different SKUs, of which 10 of them sell regularly. Some of them are extremely expensive. There's a place near me that's still trying to sell powder for $45 or $50 a pound, and it's really dusty. Generally, in most areas, there's somewhere that has a good selection and reasonable prices. If you're paying somewhere in the $25 to $30 a pound range for most powders, you're okay. And I would just go with at that level. If you happen to be around the Atlanta area, Cabela's is decent. They're not as great as they used to be. Bass Pro kind of ruined that. But they're okay and they've got a decent selection. There's a place called Adventure Outdoors that at least the last few times I've been there had decent powder selection. There's a few others, but find a local place. You're going to need it. And it's also one of, you know, when you run out of powder 2 days before a match, you're not getting it shipped. You can't overnight powder. Buy a pound, maybe buy a pound of a couple of ones, give them a test. Into the next thing. Don't reload more than 20 to 50 rounds of anything before you start testing. 20 is more on the rifle side, 50 is more on the pistol side. I one time reloaded 300 rounds of light-loaded 9mm for a P-38 that I thought I needed because I wanted to keep it in good condition, given that it was like 70 years old, and they wouldn't actually cycle the gun, or any other gun that I had. So, I threw 300 rounds away because pulling 9mm bullets is not worth the time it takes. Load a few. It's okay to do a ladder-type testing, where you may load at the minimum load and then 2/10 of a grain up and 4/10 of a grain up and 6/10 of a grain up. Don't load too many rounds before you go test. I've heard of people that literally they went and they bought a case of bullets and an 8-pound jug of powder and a bunch of cases, and they looked up a load in the book and they just loaded the entire lot with them without testing, and then they ended up with something that was pretty much the same as buying Wolf steel case as far as accuracy goes, because it just didn't work with their rifle. And generally they were bargain shopping and got crappy projectiles. So load some, go test. The other thing I'll tell you is you're not going to blow through those test rounds as quickly as you would, you know, your cheap Winchester white box or S&B ammo, because for one, you're going to be nervous. For two, you really need to be paying attention to how the gun is operating and a lot more detail. So you're not going to go do a mag dump with these. It's going to last you at least 20 minutes at the range. Part of this, keep really, really good labels. I'm terrible at this. I have pulled loads out, shot them, and gone, wow, that was amazing. What was that loaded? No idea. That was a waste of time right there. There's a lot of ways to do this. Some people I know like to use Ziploc baggies. They're convenient. They're cheap. They're readily available at the Wally World. Some people like to use those MTM boxes. Those do work better if you're doing like a ladder type load. There's a lot of ways to do it. I'll actually Sharpie on cases a lot of times, especially if I'm shooting like an AR, because then I can shoot and go back and check for, you know, take a look at the case effects based on different loads without having to track every case down as I shoot it. Find a way to label it. Keep good notes. The old school way was to use a notebook. My handwriting is worse than a doctor's, so I tend to use online, and for that same reason, I have a computer with a monitor mounted on my reloading bench, and I put the data right in. Find a way to keep records, keep good records, make sure you know what's in a load. Check, check, check. Triple check everything, especially when you're first starting out. It may seem like a pain, but I would check the overall length of every cartridge that you reload. I would check, honestly, when you're starting out and you've got a new powder thrower, I would check every case weight. In fact, a lot of times throwing it into the pan and weighing it and then putting it into the case is not a bad idea. If you're loading on a progressive, and even I'll do this, when I'm starting a new load, I will at first check like every five cases to make sure it's got the right powder in there. I also keep a good visual on it to make sure the powder level isn't visibly changing. But, you know, as I get further into a load, as my press is sitting there running the same thing longer, I might check one in every 10, one in every 20. But on a new load, it's really common. The other thing on a powder thrower, this is a bonus, this is 9A. When you're setting up a powder thrower, there's a lot of things that can affect it. For one, take a non-scented dryer sheet and wipe down the inside of your powder thrower. The plastic parts, that'll eliminate a lot of the static cling. If there's any kind of grease or wax on the parts, especially metal parts, clean them off with brake cleaner. And then I would actually, for a brand new one, I like to run a pound of powder through it. Just dump it straight through. Just keep throwing the lever, dump it into a thing, pour it back in the jug. Commercially available or home user grade powders all have graphite in them. And that graphite will do a lot to lubricate that powder thrower. Then when you're tuning in a load, I will tune it where I think it needs to be, and I will throw 10 throws into a pan and put it on the scale, and that should measure in at 10 times what I want my load to be. And until I get that, I will keep tweaking or throwing powder. There's a few powders I've used, and a few powder throwers especially. The first 20 or so throws will be all over the place. It's like they gotta settle down, you know, gotta work out their jitters, and then they start throwing fine. But those first early ones, you know, I guess the powder's not aligned in the hopper right, or maybe there's a little static charge in there, or their feng shui isn't right. I don't know what it is. Some of them don't do well right off the, and that's every time you do throw a new powder in there. It's not just when they're brand new. So triple check everything. 10 seconds now could save your gun down the road. And lastly, stop pretending this is going to save money. If you think it's going to save money, your definition of saving is not the definition of saving. You may shoot more, you're not going to save money. You can continue to lie to your spouse if you want to. That's between you and him, her, it, whatever. Don't pretend you're going to save money. You can spend more money on this crap than you ever spent before. So, I hope some of these tips helped you. I'm actually working on setting my reloading bench up now. I've got a video that I want to shoot regarding a couple of little setup tips that are more from the this is how to set a workbench up that happens to have reloading press on there. As I get organized, I may do like a shoot a video of the kind of setup that I use. And then I do have one experiment that I started before, and hopefully I can find all my notes on it. So I really want to do that one. That one should be fun. If there's anything you guys specifically want to see, give me a shout out. ReloadingRagChew@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook. I will tell you, due to a lot of personal and overall, I'm really not enamored with any part of Facebook. I'm not spending a lot of time on there, so I'm pretty slow to respond to stuff, and sometimes things get missed. The whole Facebook notifications don't work real well when you turn them off. So the email works, and then, like I said, I'm looking at doing something on Reddit. I kind of like it more. But if you send me a message on Facebook, especially for some reason, if you post a comment on Facebook, I seem to get those more reliably than I do messages, which makes no sense to me, but Facebook. So, well, have fun. All of you who got new presses for Christmas, congratulations. Welcome to a rabbit hole of excitement. Take care. Be safe. If you got questions, let me know. Otherwise, I look forward to talking to you guys soon.